The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And you're listening to the Celtics Life podcast.
Welcome, everybody, inside the Celtics Life podcast. I'm Mark Allison here with my man Justin Quinn. We are right now on Celtics vacation with a three-game break after the Celtics now riding high, two games to none on the Cleveland Cavaliers, to the shock of many people around the NBA. And we're here. We are waiting for game three in Cleveland, Saturday night, 3 days off, kind of wild. Justin, how are you biding through the time?
Well, I am trying to get everything that hasn't been getting done just because of all the stuff I've been writing about and other stuff going on with the Celtics. It's been really hard to keep up with just a complete wealth of information out there to talk about. So without further ado, I don't know. I'm pretty happy.
Well, since the last time we potted, the Celtics won their last series with the Philadelphia 76ers in five games, also to the surprise of many people. Lots of folks thought that was not going to be a Celtics victory, never mind a Celtics winning 4-1. Thoughts on the finish of the series, Justin? We had a pretty exciting game five.
A couple of thoughts. The last two-minute report came out and showed that Smart fouled Embiid, that he traveled on a steal, and that, you know, Big Pouty Baby, a.k.a. Joel Embiid, was right about the non-call. And you know what? I don't really care because I had to sit through game four.
I was just going to say, after what we had to deal with in game four, too fucking bad. But yeah. Anyways, and you know, that the Marcus Smart, the travel on that steal is absolutely ridiculous. You know, I mean, he came down from the air. I understand maybe he shuffled some feet in there, you know, on that steal. There isn't a referee. Tim Donaghy would not have called that a travel if he was, doing the Lakers Sacramento series from back in the day. It just, nobody is making that call. So it seems ridiculous to even bring that up as part of the last 2 minute report.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they just wanted to, you know, throw a little something else in there. But if they called that kind of quote unquote traveling on a regular basis, the sport would be unwatchable.
Yeah, no kidding. And you know what? To their credit, Philly fans, I did not. People were always questioning calls during the game and whatnot, but I didn't hear a ton of flack after the game for that stuff, or like, oh, look at this. I think they were just really bummed about their team's performance in the series and didn't so much as blame the refs. And maybe it's because they know the refs gave them that game four, but it's. I got to give them credit where credit's due, because I didn't see a lot of that after the game.
No, I didn't either. And they're going to be good next year, and they know it.
So. Yeah, I think here's the thing, though. I mean, you know how we've been saying the Celtics, everything's been gravy for the last couple of series here. We all kind of thought we'd win the first round against the Bucks, but anything past that is pretty much gravy. Winning that last series so big was huge, obviously. I do think the Philly fans thought going into that series that they were going to be at least playing in the Eastern Conference Finals, don't you?
I think they did, and they had a good reason to. I mean, on the surface, we've talked we've talked kind of at length about how the last third to definitely quarter, but third of their schedule was mostly cupcakes and not incredibly difficult teams, and definitely none of the league's top teams.
Their little winning streak at the end there, you mean?
Yeah, so it wasn't you know, anything too...
A little bit of a mirage, for sure.
Exactly. I don't want to poo-poo it too much, but...
No, I mean, yeah, and it's, I mean, right, it's impressive either way, but at the same time, we were taking note of that weeks ago, that, yeah. You know, there was a lot of bum teams in there, a lot of tanking teams, catching those guys at the end of the year. That's kind of an ideal road into the playoffs, but at least for positioning-wise. Maybe not so much for the skill level of your team. Maybe that had something to do with them not being as sharp as perhaps they should have been, teams that are kind of rolling over.
I think it did. Mm-hmm. I think it did, but this brings me to another team that isn't performing as sharp as they should be, based on what we saw in the last round. Mm-hmm. That, of course, being the Cavaliers. As you said, we're up 2-0. And this after they basically waxed the floors mm-hmm. with Toronto. What do you think about that? I mean, was Toronto really that bad? Or was it a win or what?
I think that says a lot more about Toronto than it does about Cleveland. They got taken to the woodshed last year, too. Toronto fans have been just... They've been seeing this coming for a while now. You know, they weren't even nearly as excited as you know, you would have thought going into the playoffs, only because they just knew they were going to poo-poo in the playoffs like they always do. They, for whatever reason, obviously the team has put a lot of that on the coach, sending Dwayne Casey packing, even though he's up for Coach of the Year. We'll get into that a little bit later. But I chalk it up more to the players not stepping up to the moment. I like, it's a players league. I understand that we have Brad Stevens and he makes a huge difference, but there's only a handful of coaches in this league that make a massive difference. And maybe Dwayne Casey is or isn't one of those coaches, but I put that on the players just not stepping up. There's no way they should have got swept by Cleveland. Like, this Cleveland team, yeah, I mean, they could lose the series, but there's no reason they couldn't have won at least a game in that series. I mean,
maybe lost, but
you're the one seed. They played really well all year. That's something, you know, that's something in the stones or something like that. You know, that's on the players, if you ask me.
In a nutshell, like, I get why they can Casey, you know, even though he gave them, I think, their best record maybe ever.
It was in franchise history.
Yeah. So okay, far. Good. I'm not making that up, I don't think. Close to it, if not. That, in and of itself, to me, should be pretty indicative of how desperate this franchise is to do something more than what they've done so far. And I don't think this was the right move to do it, because realistically, there's a very limited field of known candidates out there, as you were kind of hinting at, that will really improve the situation for them. And if not Casey, then who? You know, we could have had Budenholzer mm-hmm. there, but now he's with the Bucks. And other than that, there's really nobody out there with a pedigree now in the modern style of play that look like they can at least be his equal and maybe better. You know, I mean, there's untested people like Ettore Messina and Becky Hammon from the Spurs organization. You know, maybe Fizdale might have been an interesting option, mm-hmm. but they waited too long on him. There's a lot of things that they could have done better to prepare for next season. And I realize it's all about optics, but now they're in a situation where they either need to tear it down, in my opinion, or just really, really nail it with a coaching hire. Because who are they going to hire that has a reliable, you know, evidence-based record of performance at the level they're trying to, at least ostensibly, at this point?
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned somebody like Budenholzer. I think I put him in the same category as Casey, where he gets a team to play well all season. And I mean, look at those Atlanta teams. He had some great teams when Horford was there, and they never – they didn't even play in the Eastern Conference Finals, did they?
I don't think they had – No.
It was second round was probably the first – they probably won a series of 1 or 2 years, right? So
I believe they made it to the Conference Finals and were swept by LeBron one season.
Okay. The were you even season. Really there if you didn't win a game? I mean, were you even really there?
And exactly, right. Like, this is the what they're trying to
it's
get
almost
past
the exact
–
right, yeah, right. Yeah. So, but I would argue that this Toronto team had more talent than any of those Hawks teams did. Like, star players.
I would say so. I mean, in depth as well, they really were built into
Yeah, I mean, that's what they were heralded for all year, is how deep that team was and how well that bench played.
They should have crushed them.
They should have been able to make that a series. It's still, but I, anyways, let's move on before we get too hung up here. Toronto is out. The Celtics and the Cavs, we've had two games. First one was an absolute blowout, unbelievable game, a really fun game to watch if you were a Celtics fan. I was losing my mind. Thoughts on that game one? You know, just a total massacre.
Favorite game of the year to cover so far, and there's been a couple of really good ones. I really enjoyed watching it while trying to figure out how I was going to transliterate what I was watching, just like poetry and basketball motion completely.
What am I watching?
Yeah, I just kept waiting for LeBron to just go nuclear.
Yeah,
and it happen.
Never happened. No, it's that's that Marcus Morris effect, right?
I was really worried about those comments that he made about guarding LeBron. Yeah. I'm the best besides Kawhi. That's just like, mm-hmm. Yeah, just go wave a red flag in front of the bull. That's a great idea, dude. And it worked.
Well, somehow he's in his head, I think, you know, and in game, although we saw what he did in game two, you know, game one blowout, got a lot of guys, everybody was shooting well in the Celtics. The Cavs shot horrendous. I think we all assumed coming into game two, it was going to be a different look altogether. LeBron came out swinging. 21 in the first quarter. He hit 42 for the game. He had a triple-double. And yet, we took basically, I mean, that's just about as good of a punch as you're going to get from LeBron. The other guys shot pretty well. I think they shot, what, as a team? Something like that?
Much better than the last game, definitely. I mean,
right. I mean, they had a good offensive night. Like, that. Nothing out of this world. And yet, with LeBron doing that, the team shooting well. The Celtics didn't shoot particularly well, and yet still we came out on top. How did that happen, Justin? What was your breakdown of game two?
Well, I mean, it was really execution of – okay, so I'm going to back up a little bit just real quick and take a look back at the last two rounds.
Okay.
The first round against the Bucks, it was kind of like a very, very poor man's version of what we're seeing with the Cavs. Then we move on to the next round and face a dominant scoring player again with some actual shooting around him this time. And we kind of, you know, leveled up, if you will, and kind of added to the skill set that was needed to defeat them.
Right.
And then we come to this series, and in theory, there is even more shooting around, you know, kind of older, kind of, you know, dare I say, washed for at least JR and Korver most nights. They can still go off. I'm not saying they're completely washed.
More so Korver most than nights. JR, but yeah.
Yeah. well, actually, lately, I don't even know.
Yeah, no. Well, Korver did have a good game, too. So
he did. Yeah. So, but we won't put
points too hard. JR did not, but then we'll get into that.
JR was awful. Yeah, we can get into that. And try let's try not to destroy him too hard, but I'm getting ahead of myself. What really ended up happening was hold down the perimeter, and whenever LeBron tries to come inside, switch either Al or Baines onto him with switchable help from whoever is nearby, if possible, without letting up on the perimeter too much, and that is a lot easier to say than do. It is really, really hard, particularly as we saw in the first quarter. Like, I really was pretty sure that they were going to take that game until basically nobody showed up, except for a little bit from Kevin Love. Kevin Love had a pretty decent night playing that night as well, but really, he was the only other person who was having anything even vaguely resembling a playoff team level game. So that is really a testament to just how tightly connected this group has become. And that really, more than anything else, like the communication and leadership of Al and Brad working with this group, that really, like, they are very attuned to what they need to be doing with each other. There doesn't seem to be any ego getting in anybody's way. It's really kind of the polar opposite of what we're looking at with the Cavs.
Yeah, so I mean, the Celtics, you're right, total day and night. Celtics look like a well-oiled machine. And the communication, I don't know if it was, it was the post-game press conference after game two. I think it was Kevin Love, but it was Kevin Love and LeBron at the podium, and they were saying about, you know, one huge thing that they really noticed from the Celtics is that communication. I mean, these guys on the other team can see it, you know, and that's, we've got our quarterback on defense and Al Horford back there. And then these guys, the guys around him, they're all at least, everybody on the floor is pretty much a capable defender, but at, you know, bottom grade, you know, everybody can play defense. Everybody hustles to play defense. Most of the guys are above average defenders. They're quick, quick hands, quick feet. And to see them shift, it is like watching poetry. You watch that, you know, it's like some kind of trap they set for LeBron where it's either Horford or Baines step up, and then somebody else crowds him from the other side. It's like sometimes they force him to pass it away from the side where there's the open guy, and they're passing it to guys that are covered. It really has been the key. I mean, because like you said, we were saying before, they outshot us. LeBron went off, and yet still we were able to beat them, and that's because we're forcing turnovers, making them make mistakes, and I mean, that's, if you were going to go into this series, that's how you'd have to figure we'd have to beat them, that, or we would have to completely shoot the lights out, which we haven't done, at least not in the last game.
We haven't really needed to either, just because they have improved defensively in the postseason. I haven't checked where they rank out of playoff teams, but they're still really, really bad, and they're just not stopping anybody, particularly when there's a mismatch, and there very often is.
So, and another thing, with Brad Stevens, he's able to exploit situations where he sees he has advantages. I think it's something that we see all year long, and I've seen it a lot in this series in particular, is Marcus Smart backing down people. They get him on Korver, they get him on George Hill, and there was a play in game two where Marcus Smart got the ball in the post, fell down on the ground, kept his dribble alive, got up, backed down, I think it was George Hill, and just scored right over the top of him. Like,
I think he hurt his ankle doing that too.
It was when he hurt his ankle, right? I remember my buddy yelling that his ankle was he was hurt, and then that was the very next play was it was just shortly after that was when he they had that big turnover spree too, where we had the back to back Marquise Morris buckets. I remember Smart fell down, and I said, he's going to get up and still post this guy up. And he did. I mean, it's like no help game. They got this guy one-on-one, like just Marcus Smart. The scouting report on him has to be out around the league that if you put a small point guard or a, frail player behind him, he will back them down all the way to the bucket and score right over the top of them. He's done it all year long. And I attribute to Tyronn Lue. It's, what are you doing? You know, there are, like, we talk about, like, you know, obviously it was, I said before, it's a players league, but at the same time, and that Topher said this a lot about Dwayne Casey when we were arguing the other day about whether his firing was valid or deserved, right? And Tyronn Lue, like, what are you doing? What are your guys, how is your guy, point guard, getting back down all the way to the bucket by Marcus Smart with no help scoring? How are your guys not prepared for something like that?
Yeah, I think there's a big cloud hanging over the organization, and I think it's a mix of future uncertainty in terms of both roster composition and what's going to happen with LeBron in the offseason. I think it's pretty obvious by now that my predictions that he was going to leave are almost certainly going to come true. I mean, even if he does win this series, he's not winning the next one.
Right.
you know, and he's not, they have nothing, you know, everything they have is not going to get better with maybe the exception of Nance and Hood, you know, so it's, what kind of future does that team have?
Yeah, I think you're spot on 100% with the cloud, the uncertainty cloud. There's a lot of guys don't know what's going to happen next year, right? And I mean, I'm with you all the way. That I think LeBron's gone. Where he goes, I don't know. People say LA. I really think he's going to look for a situation where he doesn't have to carry the entire load all the time. He'll be able to extend his career that way. He'll be able to battle for championships, and whatever that is, whether it's people say Houston, Philadelphia, whatever he finds is a fit for that. He's not going to go to a place just because of the location. If he goes to the Lakers, he's going there with another superstar in tow. And, you know, they'll build around that and the young guys that they have. But there's no chance he's going to a team where he's got to completely carry the load the way he does.
No, and I don't really think he can. I think we are really, really starting to see signs of, if not aging outright, him taking steps, which is part of the problem, really, to save himself for when he absolutely must play his best.
Right. We saw that. It's especially this year during the regular season, right? How many games did we see where LeBron just, I mean, he may have an offensive game, but he's not playing defense or, you know, and we know that he can do that. I mean, he still has that ability. But like you said, trying to keep some extra gas in the tank. If he plays on a team with other stars on it, he's not going to have to be the guy and drag the whole team to a win every night.
Yeah, Kevin Love is not that guy.
No, and Kevin Love's a very good player. That's not even, I wouldn't even take a knock at him. I think he's he can be the second best player on a team, but your third best player has to be much better than their third best player is. You know, I mean, who is their third best player? Is it George Hill? I mean,
oh boy, I don't even know. I would say I have no answer, really. It depends on the night.
Yeah, that's what the problem is with the Cavs, you know? I do expect, however, going into game three, I expect them to give us the same kind of punch that we got in game two to start. Come out hot. LeBron, shooters hitting shots. J.R. Smith's not going to go 0-for-1,000,000 again, although maybe he will. I don't know. You never know with that guy. But I expect their three-point shooters to be making shots at home. I think game three is going to be very difficult for the Celtics to win.
While you bring up J.R. Smith, I really want to talk about his, before we jump into game three.
Oh, yeah. Before we move on to game three, we do have to discuss.
I just got to get something off my chest. And, you know, any team, any play where you push a guy who is in the air, you know, if you did that by accident, you're a dumbass. Now, if you do that intentionally and have the fucking stones to admit it, you're just a fucking piece of shit, man. Yeah. Get the fuck out of the league before you fucking hurt somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not. Anyone that listens to this pod regularly knows I am not a big fan of J.R. Smith. I don't like players that are complete streaky, hot, cold like that. I don't like guys that you just can't rely on night to night to do, you know. And he's worse now than ever in terms of which J.R. Smith's going to show up. You rarely see the one that's actually hitting a ton of shots. He doesn't really play defense anymore, or at least not at a good level. He used to be a pretty good defender.
When he wanted to be.
He used to be a super athletic guy. You know, he could dunk. He was in the dunk contest at least one year. It was always a whether he applied himself, but he never had a problem applying himself shooting. But hey, one of the funniest things I saw after the game two was a play. Somebody tweeted that of J.R. Smith. His teammate was coming to the basket for a layup. I don't remember who it was. It was, you know, if it was Rodney Hood or George Hill, ran into him. He ran into his own player coming up the field. His player, fumbled the ball, kicked it back out somehow regained control, kicked it back out. J.R. Smith fell out of bounds, gets back up, and immediately calls for the ball after he just ran into his own teammate. Like, and then, meanwhile, he's 0-for-8 or whatever it was. But somebody made some video, like, the stones on this guy to to have the that right to have the gall to just jump back up after you just ran into your own teammate and puts his hands up for the ball. This is in the fourth quarter of the game. I was that made me laugh. But while we're on Smith, like, were you surprised that the league didn't you know, do anything besides the flagrant call afterwards?
Kind of, yeah. Because I mean, this is, you know, I mean, they missed the call. They really could have gotten him with a second technical for the jawing after the situation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that was kind of shocking that they didn't when they kept going at it. I mean, the refs did a pretty good job of defusing the situation. You know, for what it was, the other players on the court too. And I mean, while it was obviously a despicable move, I was really surprised to see how many people around the NBA thought that was a disgusting, you know, play. I don't get me wrong, I did, but he's also our player, so I feel like it takes it to another level. But no, I know, and you're right. But to validate your thoughts on it, I mean, I saw everybody around the NBA, fans of whatever team it was, even Cavs fans, were saying how bad that was. You know, I had, yeah, so, you know, I had the envy after the game, and I saw a bunch of comments from Cavs fans about where that was really trash. And they were pissed at J.R. Smith anyways because he was awful in that game. So, I mean, that obviously has something to do with it. But, yeah, I mean, I was a little shocked that they didn't do anything else, just basically for him on purpose.
I mean, we're missing a guy, an all-star, basically.
Yeah,
because
that fell on a play that was on accident that could have been very similar to that in terms of falling from that height, you know? And Hayward didn't look like he came down anywhere near as badly as Horford did there. So definitely, you know, little whatever. But what are you going to do? Anyways, back to game three. So game three, after the mini vacation we have here, Saturday night, like I was saying, I think the Cavs come out, give us that same punch that they gave us the other day. And I think it's going to be very difficult for the Celtics to win game three. I do think though, if they can keep it close, and keep the pressure on in the second half, the key is to not get down by too much in the first half. Right? I could see the Cavs getting out to a huge lead in the first half and then coasting to a win. Although we always see the Celtics battle back from stuff like that, from any insurmountable lead. It seems like they can get themselves back into the game. But on the road, against LeBron, who I think will probably have another 40-point triple-double, if I was guessing, right? The three-point shooter's actually hitting threes. So that's my thing. If I had to pick, I think it's going to be really hard for the Celtics to win game three.
I do too, and I picture LeBron, instead of going nuclear like he tried to do in the first quarter of game two, I look at him as becoming the super distributor, mm-hmm. and really trying to get his guys to light it up, because like you said, everyone assumes, and I think he does too, that they will play better
right.
at home with a crowd behind them, with a familiar environment. I think that it will be – I don't think it's impossible for the Celtics to win game mm-hmm. three, but I do think that if they do win a game in Cleveland, which is going to be pretty difficult, even with this Cavs team's mm-hmm. defense and everything else that we've been talking about, I do think that the easier game is going to be
– Right, yeah, I agree with you too. I think, you know, there's a good chance they come out, blow their load in game three, and then we have an opportunity to steal game four. Ted, a thing that does concern me – and not that this is going to bother the Celtics at all, but I get a little worried when I hear all around the league everyone talking about how dead the Cavaliers are.
That makes a certain person very angry.
Yeah, you know, no, but I mean, it makes me a little uneasy given that a lot of people didn't give us a chance coming into the series. I think I thought we had a 50-50 shot at least to win the series. That was my thinking coming in. I thought, you know, it was. A lot of things depended on what would happen, you know, if the Cavaliers could play together as a team and if LeBron was completely out of his mind. We've already seen we can play when LeBron's pretty close to completely out of his mind. So we can still win those games, but it is the Cavs team that they're going to need. But it worries me that when you hear around the NBA, because everyone was picking them for, even after getting smoked in game one, all the national guys that weren't named Paul Pierce were saying that, oh, they're, the Cavs are going to, you know, they're going to come back, and you watch in game two, and it sure looked like that. I saw those tweets firing out in that first quarter of that game. Oh, this is the Cavs team. They're back, blah, 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 blah. And then they did. They weren't. So do you think that's what are your thoughts on that? You know, and it's because it does concern me a little bit that now everybody's saying the Cavs are dead. And these guys are the same guys that have been wrong all along. So,
well, I mean, we've had plenty of evidence that it is not the best bet to bet against a LeBron-led team. But I think there's a lot of factors to consider here. And the narrative aspect of it is something that LeBron definitely uses, regardless of how he talks about at the podium after a game with zero level of concern, blah, 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 blah. He has a lot more than zero level of concern, and it's all about trying to control the narrative as much as it is about trying to control the game itself, because people feed off of that. And to a certain extent, I've also been trying to stay away from being irrationally exuberant about our current situation, which is really goddamn hard to do, let me say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I've kind of had that same feeling, and you know, my Homer heart has us winning Banner 18. But, you know, the Homer heart is not good for reasonable basketball analysis for anyone, right. You know? Which is what I'm trying to do for the people. So with that in mind, I have been really trying to temper, you know, home court advantage and LeBron's history. Yeah, it's definitely the weakest team he's had since he was young. You know, since 2010, really, when we knocked
him out. Yeah, I don't even – it's not even close.
Yeah. But that said, it's still a LeBron-led team. And, you know, I don't want to really will this kind of narrative into existence. But if he comes back from something like this, it's going to be one of, if not the most amazing – and he's already done one of, if not the most amazing playoff turnarounds – In the sports history. So I'm a little wary about pronouncing us definitively ahead, as it were.
Yeah, I don't know that it'll all be that historic. I mean, if the Cavs win the next two games at home, we're looking at, what, two games, two out of three, with two at home. You know, I would like our chances in a game five, I guess, but game seven against LeBron at the Garden, I don't really look forward to that. I mean, it would be fun to send him home, but if we won another game, if we go up three games to one, and then he somehow came back, I would say that would be incredible. But if they win their next two games at home, we're still locked up, and this is, you know, obviously you know, headed for six or seven games. But I don't think it would be all that historic just yet. But given the way that we've won these games, though, I can see where you come from with that, though.
It's just the quality of the team that's surrounding him. If somebody can get to the NBA Finals basically mm-hmm. by their own volition with a rec league around them, more or less, in terms of comparison, that's pretty freaking amazing. That's, in my mind, that's even more impressive than the considerably better team came back from the Warriors 3-1
situation. I hear that for sure.
Faster than you'll ever live to be.
And well, aside from the games this week, we've also had the draft lottery, and for Celtics fans, it was at least a little bit exciting. I mean, I didn't really get my hopes up, so I wasn't expecting anything. It was going to be more of a, oh, wow, that would be really awesome. I didn't expect this to land any, obviously, with the percentages. So I had already wiped that from my mind that wasn't going to happen, and I was already looking at how terrible can Sacramento be next year. Unfortunately, Sacramento did move up in the draft. They ended up with the number two pick, which kind of stinks for a number of reasons. One, most much being that you know, we now hold the rights to Sacramento's pick next year, or Philly's pick, whichever one's worse. I think most of us can agree that it'll probably be Sacramento's, unless of course it's the number one overall pick, which in that case we will get Philly's pick still. So number two, Phoenix has the number one overall pick in the draft. What do you think, Sacramento? Where do you think they're going to go? And what? How big of a, you know, how much can they? Can I mean? Can how far up from the bottom can they come?
Yeah, they are bad, and they have a horrible mix of players. They have a bunch of big men in a game that is dominated by wings, and you know, like they drafted Papagiannis, I think, at 13 last year, when most people had him in the second round. So I fully expect them to completely botch this, and you know, kind of go the whole. I don't know. Maybe they won't pick a bust in this particular draft. But I have very, very little faith in their front office. Phoenix has actually been really not so great drafting in the last couple of years either. So maybe one of the two of them will actually get it right. But I don't think that either of them is making the playoffs. So
yeah. Okay. So and here's a scenario here. Who do you, number one? You think it's Ayton? DeAndre Ayton?
It really depends, because some of you who follow the draft a little bit more closely have probably heard that Luka Doncic may stay in Europe until 2019. And for a team that just hired one of his old coaches, and you know, and you could have kind of like a EuroLeague reunion in Phoenix, that doesn't bode very well, considering they have the top pick. It makes me wonder what exactly that's about, whether it's really – does he really like what he's doing over there and is not really that invested in playing in the NBA? Is there some kind of other thing going on? Does he want to make sure that he gets to Phoenix? Like, I really
– maybe – well, here's my thing. Like, I can't imagine Phoenix, like, not wanting to see what they have now. You know, they already played the waiting game with Dragon Bender. You know, you've got Devin Booker, you've got Josh Jackson. I can't see them wanting to stash a guy for a year if that's what Doncic is really wants to do. If he really thinks he's going to wait another year, do you think that's positioning to keep him away from Phoenix? Is that what you're saying?
It's just really weird, because you would think, his old coach is heading the team that has the pick that could take mm-hmm. him. He would say, you know, I'm really happy to play for whoever, but it would be great to be blah, 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 blah. And that's not what we're hearing.
Well, that would be ideal for us if Doncic goes number two and doesn't come next year. You know what I mean? If that's the case and he's really being truthful about that, that's like best case scenario for us. Because then what's Sacramento going to add, you know, in the offseason?
Oh. Yeah, and like basically everybody else who's likely to go for Sacramento at that point in terms of talent, unless they really do something stupid, which they very well could, mm-hmm. Basically everybody else who's going to be on the board, Ayton, Marvin Bagley, Jaren Jackson, Mo Bamba, they're all either combo forwards or centers, mm-hmm. which are the last thing that this team needs in terms of roster building. Now they could flip it or some of the players for other parts, but none of them are particularly great. So they're not going to get anything particularly mm-hmm. good back for it either, you know? So I don't know. I really don't expect Sacramento's situation to change very much, no matter who they draft.
All right. Well, I like to hear that. How about the Celtics? So now missing out on getting one of those top picks this year, we're picking – what are we picking? 27th?
27th.
Anybody in range there that you – expect or at least hope? How about who do you think could possibly slip to us that perhaps you know would be right up Ainge's alley?
There's a couple of different guys that I put together just a nice short list of guys I think that could either slip or would be a good fit. Grayson Allen, we've talked about before. You know, he's a jerk, he's a dirty player, but I mean, he's bigger, he can hit the three, and he's done it a lot. He's a little older, but most of the aging thing, I think, came about because his antics kind of hurt his draft position. I kind of feel at this point that, you know, once he's in a situation where he's actually earning money for a living, that he might slip into some bad habits and do some dumb things. But I mean, we've had players like that before. And to me, if somebody who could have been a lottery pick had they declared earlier, potentially, I'm not saying he was, and that anyone was definitely going to pick him, but there was talk of him being a lottery pick earlier, that he might have been, mm-hmm. to me, in my mind, he's a good option to think about if he's available. People are thinking he could go as far as like the high 20s. So he might be in our range, but he could go earlier than that too. Jalen Brunson is one of two players from Villanova, I think, that would be particularly useful, particularly if we need to replace Terry Rozier or really anybody in the backcourt that we are going to rely on for second unit scoring. He's a three-level scorer. He's a good defender and distributor, but he is short. So that is something that's kind of pushed him down despite the highest level of success. He won a national championship. So that is something to think
about.
Some
pedigree there.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, as a UConn fan and watching what has happened with Shabazz Napier, like, yeah, sure, guy sticks around for multiple years and is a little undersized. It makes you worried, but, you know, Shabazz Napier may not be a star in this league ever, but he is a very serviceable second-unit point guard who could, you know, threaten to develop into a starting point guard on a bad team at this point. And with the 27th pick of the draft, that's about what you're likely to get if you are lucky. So I would be okay with that. Tyus Battle of Syracuse, 6'6" guard. He's a great defender, but he is turnover prone and has a bad shot selection, kind of like someone else we can think of who might not be here in the future. Beside him, there is Omari Spellman of Villanova, who is a 6'9 combo forward. He can rebound, he can block, he shoots to three. Really a prototypical Brad Stevens / Danny Ainge, you know, current roster kind of guy. And then the only other guy that has really been catching my attention is Jacob Evans out of Cincinnati, who is a switchable wing who can hit the three and defend pretty well. But before we get into the non-draft stuff, I just want to say I am very happy with the ultimate return of the Cleveland Cavaliers for their trade for Kyrie Irving, which is basically some lint and the number 8 pick.
Yes. Yes. I co-sign that 1,000%. Maybe they nail that 8th pick and they get a superstar. You know, I mean, that's obviously a possibility. But
could happen. Trae Young has been talked about, and a lot of people are down on him, but, you know, he could be available in that range, and, he has the drive, if not, you know, the guarantee. There's nothing guaranteed that late in the draft. Like, you're probably going to get a starter in the first 3 picks, unless you really blow it, Anthony Bennett kind of style, but, you know, as long as you are doing your research, you're probably going to come out okay. You still have a good chance at number 8, but, you know, whoever they end up picking, they will be lucky if they get at least a starter out of that. They could get a star, though.
Yeah, no, it's certainly, you know, obviously they come from everywhere. But, you know, ideally, they would have liked to have been a little higher than that. Moving on, past the lottery. If the Celtics do pull this off, what kind of a hit does this – I mean, and by this off, I mean beating the Cavs. What kind of hit is this to LeBron's legacy?
Well, I kind of feel like he's already taken that hit, but he's not winning a title this year. He's aging. You know, I don't think it's going to be a big hit, frankly speaking. Much of what has happened with the state of his roster is at least partially his fault. You know, there's something to be said for the front office's cost-cutting measures, but it's also understandable. We've had this conversation several times. So, I mean, there's a limited amount of blame that you can lay directly on his shoulders, but he did also put himself in this position. And at this point, I feel like the damage is already done. I don't think it's going to be too much more of a hit if he loses the series, just because it's really clear, you know, it was clear going into his prime, and now it's clear him coming out of his prime, that even as a top 5, wherever you want to rank him, over, like, all-time player, it's just not enough, you know? And you might want to give him a bigger ding on his legacy for how he's approached team building as a person with enough leverage to make that something he can partially control, more so than anything to do with his actual skill. What about you?
My thing here is I don't think that it takes a huge hit to his legacy. I think, you know, I think people are going to come to say just how shitty this Cavs team really was. You know, he had no help, whatever. That's how the LeBron apologists will polish it and whatever. They can get away with that. I don't care. What I love is this will be full circle. The streaks of his finals appearances started at the Celtics' expense.
Absolutely. Right?
And it will end with at our expense. So, you know, we were the last team to beat him. The 2010 team, we went back to the finals. The team that sent him out of Cleveland on the run to Miami to build the super team, right? And it's almost like it's happening all over again, full circle. We both, and many people are saying that LeBron is going to jettison, obviously, and you know, wherever it is, it'll be so great that the Celtics did it again. Like, whether or not we think he's leaving either way, right? Whether he beats us or not, I would just love it so much more if we were the ones to send him packing once again and running from Cleveland and back to get reinforcements.
Yeah, I kind of agree. There were moments where I just remember thinking, I cannot wait to pay this mother bleep back.
I'll be honest with you. I did not think we would be able to
not
do that
in the time frame. Nope, I agree.
No, and at least not, like I was hoping that we could catch LeBron at least at the end of his career. You know, I just didn't expect us to turn around as quickly as we did. And for him to still be on top, at least on top of the East, right? He's been on top of the East for the last decade. And for us to actually get a shot to be able to knock him out and be here next year, if he runs to the LA or goes to the Rockets, we wouldn't have that opportunity unless he came in the finals. And I don't know. I would take a lot of joy. Our chances in the finals are going to be very, very slim. But I would take a lot of joy in ending LeBron's final streak and just shipping him out of Cleveland again, like on the run. I that would really make me happy.
Quick.
On the flip side, now the Celtics playing so well this year. I mean, obviously they were without Hayward all year. We really didn't get to see how the team played with him. Kyrie goes down, and here we are in the Eastern Conference Finals, up 2-0 on Cleveland. What is this? I mean, what do you think this does to, you know, Kyrie? I mean, obviously he's there rooting his team on. He wants them to win. I don't care what anybody says. But at the same time, like, is this kind of picture like, Terry Rozier's played so well. You know, does this change anybody's perception on him?
Nah. I mean, if we are in a situation where Kyrie's knee is something of a longer-term problem, great. We are in a great position.
Right. No, I think that's spot on, yes.
But, you know, everyone's talking about, is this hurting Kyrie Irving, how well they're doing? Look at both teams could have used him, and both teams made deep runs into the play. Well, how come nobody's saying this about Gordon Hayward? Considering both teams he left, both made very deep runs into the playoffs. And it's apples to oranges, people. It's just, these are not commensurable situations.
No.
They developed organically, and I really, you know, I'm not a mind reader, but I don't think either Kyrie or Gordon Hayward is in any way jealous. I think all they are doing is chomping at the bit for next season when they are going to run over everyone.
I cannot wait for people seeing them play next year to be like, oh, wow. Like, I forgot how good Gordon Hayward was. Like, he's one of the top 20 players, Gordon Hayward. Kyrie's at, I would say, top 10, top 15 at worst, right? I mean, these guys are like two of the best players in the NBA. People forget, like Terry Rozier has played great. There's no bigger fan of Terry Rozier than me. He's not Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, he does other things better than him, but perhaps whatever. You don't see Terry Rozier scoring 50 points a game. If he ever does that, I hope he does, you know, but he's not on that level. No, and maybe he will be someday. I don't know. But, you know, Kyrie Irving is – he's one of the best scorers in the league. Shooters, ball handlers. Granted, Rozier does a lot of these things well, but people like – he can't take over an entire game the way that Kyrie can. And Gordon Hayward, the same thing. Like the great play that we've seen from Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward like does that all the time, right? So these guys, when they have a great night, that's what Gordon Hayward was supposed to be doing like most nights for us, you know? And granted, we've lucked out. Those kids have been fantastic, and I'm not knocking what they've done, but I'm just trying to illustrate that like what they are doing now, and they've been doing pretty well lately. I mean, we knew we were going to get that from Gordon Hayward every night. So to be able to go into next year with those three guys, it's going to be incredible. So I know I'm psyched. And I think people, there's going to be a big eye opening for a lot of people. Especially since a lot of them didn't get to see Gordon on this team. I think there's a lot of people that didn't see a lot of Jazz games and don't even understand. Like they got the hype going into the season, and then it just kind of deflated when he went down. And I think a lot of people are going to be shocked next year.
Well, that's probably a good jumping off point to get the heck out of here. Anything you wanna say before we get out?
No, but I will say, everyone, please don't forget to check out the links at the top of CelticsLife.com. We've always got a huge variety of shirts and hoodies in our store, and you can even grab tickets to the next game over there. You can find the blog on the pod on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and most podcatcher apps. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, be sure to rate us 5 stars. If you don't like something or have a suggestion, you can always hit us up in the comment section of any Celtics Life article or on Twitter with that hashtag CLPod. Guys, been a great time. Getting ready for end of our vacation. Saturday night, Game 3. Go C's. From me and Justin, we'll catch you guys later.
Take care, y'all.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.